MFA is bulletproof. Oh, sorry, Cisco is having me retract that statement. And the US Supreme Court is clamping down on cybersecurity, and Microsoft isn't messing around anymore with AI. These stories and much more on MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by OIT VoIP. Enhance your clients' communication abilities with our VoIP solution, featuring integrated billing, on-demand training, and live US support. Collaborate seamlessly with Microsoft Teams integration and put your entire phone system in your pocket with MobileX. Improve your offerings and increase profitability with reliable service for 1/10 of the average MSP acquisition cost. To learn more, visit oit.co or dial 844-CALL-OIT.
Good morning and welcome to the April 19th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. My name is Tony Francisco and joined today by my amazing co-host, Mr. Tom. That was in the other episode. Jason Slagle. Jason, let's get back to the point. In the B-reel, if we include that in the B-reel, there's a whole outtake to this intro. I have never seen Jason and Tom actually together. I'm convinced you're actually, but then I've never seen you and Batman in the same room, which in Spider-Man, there's a whole bunch of questions that I have right now. Jason, how are you doing, brother? It has been entirely too long.
I mean, I'm just an AI that Tom coded.
you're the GPT version, and he's the Claude version, and you guys are just kind of like impersonate each other.
Yeah, if we get in the same room together, it explodes.
Oh man. Okay, so the good news is we've got a lot of good stuff ahead. The bad news is we're not talking about it. So let's get into the news. In my first story from Becky Bracken, story from darkreading.com, Cisco Duo's multi-factor authentication service has been breached. A social engineering cyber attack has compromised a third-party telephony provider handling Cisco's Duo multi-factor authentication service. The breach occurred April 1st and affected SMS logs of specific users from March 1st to March 31st, 2024. Although no message content was accessed, phone numbers, carriers, and other metadata were compromised. Cisco advises affected users to notify anyone who might have been exposed to stay vigilant against further phishing attempts. Jeff Margolis of Savant said that this breach reflects trends of successful social engineering attacks and increased focus on identity security providers. He emphasized the importance of understanding reliance on third-party identity security companies and implementing adequate cybersecurity measures. Jason, let's talk about this for a moment. First and foremost, I know that you have zero experience with security, and I don't even think you understand what MFA is.
What's a duo?
it's 1+1.
Oh, okay.
Let's pretend for a moment that you do have some cybersecurity experience. What are your thoughts on this topic? We all know that Cisco Duo is a main player in the enterprise world. There are multiple MFA solutions out there, and I know your favorite is SMS. Just text me because no one can. By the way, everyone, that's how you force. That's like that Jason's funny bone is you hit something that hurts him in security, common sense security. You hit it, and he has to laugh. Tell us how does this impact the industry as a whole? Since, let's be blunt, Cisco Duo is the 800-pound gorilla in this particular genre.
Yeah. So, I mean, my immediate thought is, first of all, like, please don't call this a Duo breach, because it's not. It's a third-party breach probably intended to get at data of Duos, but Duo was not breached. And I hate clickbait titles like that. The actual thing here, this has to me all of the hallmarks of probably nation state actor, right? Like, they are after something specific, because they got access to data, and they got access to one type of data from, apparently, unless we don't know enough, one company for a very specific time period. So what that tells me is somebody has access to somebody's account. Duo is offering SMS-based push, right, or the code, or whatever the case is, and it's easier to breach the SMS provider than it is to breach Duo, right? So somebody has a nugget that they need to act on, and they did this breach so that they could push that further along. So this is the entire story here.
So, okay. So let's go back. Let's unpack this one step at a time. First things first, I cannot agree with you more that this was a social engineering attack in some capacity. This was not a Cisco Duo breach by definition. However, Cisco Duo was involved in the process, but that's like saying, the seatbelts cause car accidents. Well, the person tangled the seatbelt up around their arms and they were trying to drive, and technically it was involved and there was a car accident because of that. But the seatbelt itself didn't cause the car accident on its own accord in its practical use. The third thing that was a very interesting part that you mentioned, the time allotment and the state actor involved in this. Do you think this was a combination of exploitations that resulted in gathering specific information that could not be used widespread? So this was very tailored to this particular attack?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. So if you look at breaches, I'm going to pick on Uber because it's the one that I can talk about publicly because it's public. I know of several others, but I can't talk about them. It's a pretty common thing for somebody to just basically SIM swap your phone. It's pretty common, I think, common knowledge that most carriers, you can pay somebody at an offshore call center between $3,000 and $5,000, depending on the carrier, to complete a SIM swap for you, because that's a lot of money for some of these offshore carrier people, right? And so if you have SMS-based configuration there and you're targeted, again, if you're targeted, then somebody can get the phone number you're using, it's just a matter of money to basically take that phone over. And there are some protective measures now. So my guess, best guess is somebody, there is a target and a specific target that somebody's after, and they needed the phone number so that they could act on it.
So what you're saying is that we're all safe. Don't have to worry about best practices, MFA. Don't even need that. You're just saying that everything is calm, cool, and collected. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Don't interrupt my ignorance here. It's ignorance is bliss. But the good news is that if there was something that is going to happen, it should happen from the top. It should happen from the very, very top, like supreme level, like Supreme Court level. And if Supreme Court level components were dictating, clamping down on cybersecurity, that would be amazing. And that's, I think, your next story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it takes us to my story. U.S. Supreme Court ruling suggests change in cybersecurity disclosure process. This is brought to us by Evan Schumann from CSO. The recent unanimous ruling by the United States Supreme Court on an SEC disclosure case regarding cybersecurity incidents creates a potential change in cybersecurity incident reporting. Companies can now omit non-material incidents from SEC reports, though they must consider the impact on already disclosed information to avoid misleading statements. According to Brian Levine, companies can reduce legal risks by wording cybersecurity statements carefully. However, this doesn't take the pressure off of them because of the SEC's extensive reporting requirements. Therefore, companies should prepare for potential disclosure of unreported incidents to improve their filings. While the case did not directly relate to cybersecurity, it sets a precedent for disclosure requirements. Additionally, the ruling suggests a modified tabletop exercise for cybersecurity teams to evaluate potential risks and ensure accurate and complete disclosures post-incident. This process aims to prevent earlier statements from becoming misleading as new information emerges. Tony, this is a good one. I have a lot of thoughts on this because I was involved with some comments on some federal rulemaking around the timelines of these disclosures and attempts to make them quicker. And one of the things that I called out was that those short timelines mean you are giving information without knowing all of the facts, and you end up having to restate things a bunch of times, which very much like erodes public trust in those statements. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think you're hitting it on the head. So for the edification of everyone out there and for the infuriation of those that are actually initiated, there's something called an RCA. And so in the event of an issue, exploitation, ransomware, hack, whatever it may be, a breach in some capacity, your audience is looking for the root cause analysis, the RCA, that's typically coming from the CTO. Now, that could be a transcript from the CTO conversation that is paraphrased by the CTO, our CEO with apologies, mea culpa, we're working on this, we've got an amazing team, our CTO, John Doe, is working on this. Here is what we've seen, here's what we're doing, more coming soon. Now, that is a very stereotypical, but that is communication 101, and we've seen that lacking for so long. What's happening in a lot of cases, and I think that, Jason, this is what you're alluding to, is that they're saying, we want that RCA in great detail. It can sometimes take months, if not a year, to go back and do the forensics and understand not just what happened, but how it got to that point. What happened prior to that? The end result's the easy part, because that's your interpretation of an immediate assessment. But the forensics of understanding, can that be replicated again? Did we put all the patches necessary so that can never happen? Is there somebody so nested in our system, in our fax machine? I said fax machine, our copier and our printer, in our VoIP, IVR system, that they can just come back at will and exploit any way they want? Or what are the rechecks going to be? Those are all questions that every one of the customers wants answered as well. But what Jason's saying is that he can't come up with the answers in 5 minutes. And for that, I'm disappointed in you, Jason.
It's 4 days, right? So the current rules are 4 days. And the reality of it is that that is...
No sleeping? No sleeping. I mean, can you imagine me and you for 4 days going through in my opinion, it's literally impossible. That is completely...
Not literally. It's definitely 100% literally, because you know what? Lawyers are involved. You can't get, like, it takes them that long to pick a coffee order.
Sometimes it takes 4 days to get a reply back. Yeah. Like, am I allowed to do this?
Yes.
And you got to wait. So here is my end question, because this is an interesting situation, because we are creating, I just want everyone to understand the gravity of what Jason is talking about right now. We are talking about the standards that need to be followed. Are we setting the standards of really, and I'm just going to be blunt, worthless or heavily diluted information? That's basically, are we looking for that happy lie, or are we looking for the sad truth?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking for is, hey, we've had an incident. Like, here's the factual information we know now, more to come. Right. Like, and I think that this ruling sets up that to be the case, where I don't have to say my conjecture and what I'm inferring. I can just say this is non-material right now, or that I don't have enough information. And then I can further, rather than say something and have to walk it back as I get more information, because it could be material, I can potentially omit it and then just add it later as I get more context. That takes us to your final thing. We're talking about stakes here. So what do you got for us?
In my next story, in a story from Paul Mazur from New York Times, Microsoft makes high-stakes play in tech cold war with Emirati AI deal. Microsoft is investing $1.5 billion, that's US, in G42, an AI giant in UAE, to counter China's influence in the Persian Gulf. Microsoft will allow G42 permission to sell Microsoft services that use powerful AI chips. In return, G42 will use Microsoft's cloud services while complying with US security arrangements. This move reflects the U.S. government's concern about safeguarding AI intellectual property while aiming to reduce G42's ties with China and strengthen U.S. influence in the Gulf region. However, U.S. officials remain cautious due to G42's past ties with China. Despite initial concerns, the agreement includes strict measures to protect technology, such as ban on transferring AI models and GPUs. Moreover, G42's recent actions, including removing Chinese technology from its operations, demonstrate its commitment to reducing ties with China. So Jason, we have heard that term, what's it called? Oh, AI. We've heard it before. We know that AI involves, chips and the processors. And we know that NVIDIA is a big player in that. Mm-hmm. And we know that there are other avenues to obtain those chips, because they are a critical component in the base of an AI delivery. This has taken an entirely new direction, or at least a new dimension in what we're seeing topically. Underneath, there is this almost this undercurrent of battles at national levels that are talking about chip influence and all of the items that depend on that chip, which is AI, which is supposedly the future, which will evolve into artificial general intelligence, which we're looking for, and the advent of, in theory, artificial superintelligence, the ASI end delivery goal, which will give us the Terminator movies and everything that we fear. What am I seeing here that is not terrifying? this is a national, global level fight that is happening in the background, and Microsoft is now involved in this to move things a little bit more towards the United States as far as influence and control of its AI delivery. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, it looks, reading this article over, it looks like this is basically just a sale of, like, we're going to let them buy Azure, right? In the Azure services that use these AI models in an attempt to get them to use our stuff instead of the Chinese stuff where it could potentially be spied on. I think that's the play here.
I think the question that I really have is, who is going to make the call? Who is going to say yes? The abdication, the giving up of power, that abdication of this particular company with China, and I'm handing it over to the US, and Microsoft is going to be that proxy. Who is going to clear that noise? Who is going to be able to reshore this back into the US hands to do what we want? And everything that's happening in China, to be blunt, is a complete black box. I have no idea what they're doing. We all know what Microsoft is doing, what Google is doing, what X is doing, what Anthropic is doing. We all understand that there could be a supernova in some capacity sitting in China that none of us are aware of. And is this a way to remediate that? Who is making that decision? I feel like I don't see that in the article. I have no concept of where that answer is.
Yeah, I don't see it in the article either. And my immediate thought was, you know, Temu had how many Super Bowl ads? It's one of those things that we are attempting to hold them back by stopping access to chips and stuff. But the reality of it is that the way they're combating that, they're just making their own. And they've already stolen a lot of the intellectual property or obtained it somehow. I guess stolen is a conjecture that I can't definitively say they did, but they've already gotten to the point now where they're making dedicated chips that are specifically for AI instead of using GPUs. They're also, I've read a ton of stories recently about them buying basically third market GPUs, de-soldering the chips from the boards and building their own like super GPU boards out of, you know, recycled chips and other things like that, right? So I applaud the effort to try to keep it there. I question the effectiveness of it because in the end, this isn't really gonna service to keep that much out of anyone's hands, I think.
I am wondering what the path is gonna be. I'm wondering if what we're witnessing right now is just kind of an ephemeral implementation of something to distract us until more of the technologies can be borrowed, we'll call them borrowed, plagiarized with pride. I am very concerned about everything that I'm seeing that is so subtle, but we understand the gravity of the situation. But what I would love to do is to find out from the audience, what are your thoughts on this? Does the MSP audience even care about this? I know MSPs are traditionally very domestic here in the United States, in the UK, and we've got a lot of our European friends listening to the show. I would love to hear from you on this particular story because the one missing factor is that since we know AI is the future, we're on the precipice of this major AI wave, this tsunami. Is China going to be an influencer in that? Not in the pulling us forward, but actually, in theory, slowing us down because of the access to the chips that they're acquiring. So I would love to hear from that audience. But in the meantime, while you're on our Discord server, typing away and we're all getting into arguments on Discord, in the meantime, let's get into the notables.
And in my first notable, hackers exploit Fortinet flaw, deploy Screen Connect and Metasploit in a new campaign. This is from the Hacker News Newsroom. Cybersecurity experts have discovered a new campaign that leverages the recent Fortinet security flaw to deploy Screen Connect and Metasploit PowerFun payloads. The campaign exploits a critical SQL injection vulnerability in Fortinet EMS devices, allowing unauthorized code execution. The attack targeted a media company, employing unsuccessful attempts to download Screen Connect and later deploying Metasploit's PowerFun script. Evidence also indicates that the threat actor has operated since at least 2022, targeting Fortinet devices and using Vietnamese and German in their operations. Organizations are advised to apply patches, monitor for suspicious activity, and employ web application firewalls for protection. And in my next notable, Avanti warns of critical flaws in its Avalanche MDM solution. This one is brought to us by Sergio Gatlin in Blippi Computer. Avanti has issued security updates for its Avalanche mobile device management solution, addressing 27 vulnerabilities, including two critical heap overflows allowing remote command execution. These critical flaws identified in WL Info Rail Service and WL Avalanche Service Components allow remote attackers to execute arbitrary commands. Previously, Avanti addressed 13 critical remote code execution vulnerabilities in Avalanche. CISA warns of MDM system exploitation risks, citing previous incidents. And in response, Avanti advises customers to update Avalanche to version 6.4.3 to mitigate these risks.
In my first notable mention from ArsTechnica.com, Broadcom says many VMware perpetual licenses got support extensions. Broadcom CEO Hock Tan announces support extensions for some VMware perpetual license holders amid changes following Broadcom's $69 billion of VMware. Tan acknowledges the shift from perpetual licenses to subscriptions, offering zero-day security patches for vSphere users. The move follows EU antitrust regulators' questioning of Broadcom over VMware licensing and support changes. Additionally, VMware channel partners and customers have expressed concerns over Broadcom's approach to business, particularly regarding smaller businesses and VMware Cloud Service Providers, CSP, partner program. In my next notable mention from TheVerge.com, YouTube's ad blocker crackdown now includes third-party apps. YouTube expands its ad blocker crackdown to mobile devices, warning users accessing videos through third-party ad blocking apps of potential buffering issues or error messages. The move aims to prevent third-party apps from disabling ads, ensuring creators are rewarded for viewership. Moreover, YouTube emphasizes adherence to its API terms of service, hinting at further actions against violators. As an alternative, YouTube is promoting YouTube Premium as an ad-free option.
Today, we're digging into the announcement by Adobe that generative AI is coming to Premiere Pro. Adobe's suite has long been the benchmark for video professionals, although it's recently been challenged by DaVinci Resolve for dominance. But with this evolution, they may be making a comeback. The introduction of Adobe's generative AI capabilities signifies a monumental shift. Central to this innovation is the Adobe Firefly Video model, complemented by the ability to integrate robust third-party AI tools like OpenAI Sora and Runway ML and more. These sophisticated technologies are not just additional features, they are deeply integrated into the editing workflow, allowing for the seamless creation and modification of content right within Premiere Pro. There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. Coming on Tuesday, the 23rd, an in-person event, the Cyber Defense Lab, built for MSPs in Chicago, Illinois. And then on the 25th, another in-person event, MSP Revenue Generator in Boston, Massachusetts. And on April 26th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, Cybersecurity Leadership Virtual Summit. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have later today at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, MSP Community Live will be back with Tom Lawrence and Josh Hobie. And then on Saturday at 10 a.m., a standalone episode of MSP Dispatch, followed on Tuesday of next week by a new AI Roundup.
So how'd you like today's show? If you like it, please hit that thumbs up button. If you didn't like it, make sure you hit it an odd number of times so you get the satisfaction of just being angry with us, but we get a little benefit as well. If you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know that we have a Discord where we post these stories all week long? You can even propose your own stories and vote on which ones we're going to cover. As our friend Rich Banky says, make sure you tell a friend. Be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. And if you have any questions, email us news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode. Just call us and leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. That works as well. Jason, I cannot thank you enough for being co-host. I still can't actually touch you, which means you are AI. I still haven't seen Tom Lawrence. I'm looking around for Tom Lawrence. I know he's out there somewhere. I kind of want to peel you back and then boop, there's Tom Lawrence. Like, ah, ha, 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 I knew it. Somewhere in your beard, like Tom pops out. Oh, that's the, that's, see, I Tom's like, ah, and then puts it back.
Yeah, last week,
I just realized your beard is Tom Lawrence inverted. It's his hair, the long hair. It was a good show. Jason, why don't you go ahead and land this plane, sign us off.
Yeah, it was a great show. I had a good time. If you had caught me last week, I think Tom recorded with you potentially last week, and he was here. So you could have had us both in the same place at the same time. So maybe next time.
Anyways, I don't believe that.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Okay, for everyone out there, thank you so much for listening. Everyone stay educated and be safe.
See ya.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
So I have doubts. What? You're on mute. You're on, who's on mute?
There. Ah, there. We got it. I was muted. I can't unmute myself when I'm muted by Danny.
Dude. Okay. So we have to go back. We have re-record that. We're going to have to re-record that. That was really funny. Okay. You ready, Danny?
On an SEC... The recent unanimous ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court on an SED. I'm tonying it up. That's what we're calling it now. And you just trip over one word.